Welcome to our series of podcasts presented by the National Crime Prevention Council and the Office for Victims of Crime, as we explore the sensitive subject of abusive and inappropriate peer-to-peer online activity, more commonly referred to as cyberbullying. With our ever-changing panel of experts, students, and guests, we share facts, observations, and opinions for the benefit of victim service providers, guidance counselors, school resource officers, psychologists, administrators, and teachers. So let's get started with our first podcast in the series, Education, the Basic Facts on Cyberbullying. We are pleased to have with us Upper School Director Jessica Romero. Also on the panel is Judy, mother of two teenagers in middle school and high school. And finally, we have Sonia, soon to be a freshman in high school. My first question is directed to Jessica. Tell us, how early are we seeing instances of cyberbullying?
Thank you for having me. Unfortunately, quite early. The age is dropping as more and more children become familiar with not only the technology, but also comfortable and possibly used to the concept of online anonymity.
Are victim service providers educated on this subject and ready to intervene and act early?
Generally speaking, yes. Whether or not a parent is involved, and we always hope they are, most of us feel we have the right and responsibility as victim service providers to insert ourselves at the first sign of cyberbullying. These need to be simple yet definitive moves, speaking to the individual students, reaching out to parents if possible, and constantly referring to and relying on the school's code of conduct. However, I can't overemphasize the importance of parental involvement.
Tell me, do kids just show up at your door with these issues?
At times they do, when they feel safe. It's really all about establishing an open door policy. They also must know that by reaching out, they're not going to make the situation worse for themselves in any way.
Cyberbullying comes in all shapes and sizes and varying degrees of severity, and it affects kids in different ways.
That's right. You've got kids who are outwardly trying to hurt or embarrass another person, or kids pretending to be someone else in order to trick them into revealing personal information.
We see the spreading of lies and even cases where someone is posing as the victim.
And particularly vicious and premeditated is the posting of pictures that are unflattering or compromising, without the victim's permission, of course.
Assuming that early intervention is extremely important, how do you know when cyberbullying is happening to one of your students if they don't reach out?
Same things parents are on the lookout for: signs of depression or distraction, or isolation, or a drop in grades, even a spike in absences.
And speaking of parents, I'll address this next question to Judy. Obviously, depression and loneliness can result from other factors beyond cyberbullying. But is it possible to detect in a way that your child is engaging in negative online communication?
To a degree. Spending way too much time online for hours and being visibly upset, then not willing to talk about things like friends, fighting with friends, change in friends with whom they hang out, being secretive, moody, and not sharing anything about their social life.
And we hear stories of kids dealing with cyberbullying in many different ways. Let me ask our youngest guest, Sonia. How do your friends or you react and respond to someone who is being a bully to someone online?
Well, I've seen kids get really sad or really scared, and a lot of kids just want to retaliate, and then they start bullying them back and sometimes don't even realize it.
This happened to you?
I didn't reach out for help when I should have, and my only way of dealing with it, I thought, was to start giving back. And then, in the end, it got out of hand, and I was just as much a part of the problem, and it kept escalating.
Until the school finally got involved.
The other girl finally told her mom, and it became a big deal, which it was. But I spoke to the resource officer at school, and we straightened things out.
Wow, a frightening time. What did you learn?
Well, sometimes kids don't talk to their parents, even though they should. But if that's not possible or the parents aren't aware of things like cyberbullying, then get help at school.
If cyberbullying goes on and on, the way Sonia's describing her experience, it can be quite debilitating, and you can really see a change in students, like depression and isolation.
And of course, there are the highly publicized cases where the student is so despondent and feels so alone they commit suicide.
Thus, supporting the argument for early intervention, recognizing that a student is possibly vulnerable and could be on the receiving end of abusive online activity is the critical first step.
This is a new world. with new technology that brings a brand new kind of threat to the emotional and physical well-being of students. We're not on the playground anymore where it's out in the open. Kids are emailing, texting, instant messaging, and social networking. After you have educated yourselves, how do you educate kids and their parents on the far-reaching and potentially damaging consequences?
We have workshops, discussion groups, assemblies for students, assemblies for parents. We just keep reiterating school policy. What's not allowed, what's inappropriate, what constitutes real and abusive threats. We even bring in consult with our own students as we revise the online code of conduct section of our school policy. After all, it's really their world we're talking about from a technology standpoint. Honestly, they know that territory better than anyone.
It's information and transparency on a regular basis.
Yes.
And you extend the reach of the school's code of conduct to include online communication that happens beyond school property and on computers and devices that belong to the student.
Yes. We must stay within the law, of course, but this is about being proactive, where victim service providers are not on the fringe or feeling indecisive about stepping in.
One last question. Do you agree with the notion that sometimes kids are just being kids and that cyberbullying, like old-fashioned bullying, is a rite of passage? Do you believe that?
Bullying is not a rite of passage and should not be ignored. We've seen how it can escalate into situations of retaliation or personal tragedies like suicide.
And Judy, your thoughts on this as a parent?
I'm one of those parents who believes that school policy should extend into every home. School administrators have their students' best interests at heart 24/7, much the same way students are dealing with it 24/7. It's with them all the time because of the nature of technology. And the issue of cyberbullying is both frightening and rampant and warrants the involvement of professionals, the intervention of victim service providers.
We're extremely grateful to our panel. Upper School Director Jessica Romero.
I'm happy to be here.
Our parent, Judy.
Thank you.
And lastly, thanks to Sonia. Good luck in high school next year.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to it.
Before we sign off, we'd like to recommend a wonderful book from our Circle of Respect book club. Today's featured book is by Trudy Ludwig, and it is called Confessions of a Former Bully. That's Confessions of a Former Bully by Trudy Ludwig. For additional information on the subject of cyberbullying and the Circle of Respect book club, please visit our website often at www.ncpc.org, as we provide updated information and present new books on a regular basis. We know that a victim service provider's best ally is a concerned parent, a parent who is able to have a frank and meaningful discussion with his or her child. Thank you for joining us. This podcast is presented by the National Crime Prevention Council and the Office for Victims of Crime, and was supported by grant number 2009-VFGX-K003, awarded by the Office for Victims of Crime, Office of Justice Programs, U.S. Department of Justice. The opinions, findings, and conclusions or recommendations expressed in this product are those of the contributors and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice.